Welcome to Freedom Cast, a podcast dedicated to interviewing star icons and entrepreneurs who have encouraged others to become more healthy and active. My name is Ashton, and it's my pleasure to host you as we take another trip through the fitness industry. It's entertaining and informative, and I hope it makes fitness more exciting and special to you in your own fitness journey. Freedom Cast is supported by Freedom Fitness Equipment in Charlotte, North Carolina. Freedom Fitness Equipment serves the health and fitness community nationwide, from free weights and strength equipment for home gyms and studios to cardio and conditioning equipment for commercial spaces. Check them out at freedomfitnessequipment.com. Let's get rolling with today's show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome Matt Vanderlaar to the podcast. Matt is an excellent nutrition coach and health and fitness coach that I have found through, I'll just say my own sources. He is the CEO of Team Fit Fat, and we'll get into that here in a few minutes. But he runs in some circles that I highly respect, the same kinds of folks. I would put you in the same category as folks like Sabrina McMullen, Olivia Pelish, Beth Faircone, who you got a podcast with, all really good content creators who don't fap around and kind of mess around. They're very straight and to the point. So thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you.
Dude, I appreciated it so much, Ashton. It's a pleasure. Looking forward to talking with you.
Absolutely. So give us a little bit of background. So where did you come from, and how'd you get into this fitness thing to begin with?
That's a great question, man. I got into the fitness thing I never intentionally got into fitness as a coach. You know, it started as a hobby, but for me personally, I started taking my health seriously back in 2015, 2016, after a relationship ended, of course. You know, and I had started work. I should backtrack even more than that. So my son is 12 years old. So he was born in 2010. And there's this picture, this notorious picture now that we call the Fat Matt picture. I was holding my son out in my backyard when he was 6 months old or so. And I remember looking at that picture a few months after the fact and like, who the hell is that guy? You know, like the guy holding my son, I don't recognize him at all. You know, I was 250 pounds or so, living a very unhealthy lifestyle. Wow. You know, partying a lot, drinking a lot of alcohol, just eating crap all the time, you know, ordering pizza, smashing bags of Doritos, drinking Mountain Dew, playing video games and drinking alcohol all the time. I was very unhealthy back then. That was kind of my wake up call for me. Like, I got a fucking son now. Sorry if I swear.
No, you're fine.
Okay. I drive a lot of F-bombs. I need to get my shit together for my son. You know, I need to be better. So I did what many people do when they want to start losing weight is I started running, you know, I made a few dietary changes. Literally, I just reduced my alcohol consumption and I cut out soda. You know, I drank Mountain Dew Code Red and regular Mountain Dew by the 2 liter at that point. Whew. So just doing those couple of things right there alone. Right. Yeah. Recipe for disaster. So I started doing that, started running, but I fucking hated running. You know, I thought that was what I needed to do to be healthy. So I did that for a better part of a year. I ran in a 5K and then promptly pretty much retired from running after that. Started lifting at that point. Then I was going through a divorce with his mom. So I was like, I'm going to get jacked. I'm going to get shredded and I'm going to get all the girls. So I started lifting weights to get the biceps, the six pack, you know, all the superficial stuff that really doesn't matter, but I thought it mattered back then. So I started doing that, started seeing great results. I started doing bodybuilding routines and things like that. Started getting the big biceps and I had the six pack, but I still wasn't happy with myself. And that's ultimately what it came down to is I was trying to make other people happy. I was working out to make other people happy, to impress other people. And something just clicked for me. I was doing all these diets and everything. You know, I was doing the keto and I had done intermittent fasting. I thought carbs were so bad for me. I was only tracking my carbohydrate intake, nothing else. I was like, this sucks. Like I'm unhappy. I'm miserable. I was depressed. So, I kind of put things into perspective for me. Like, why am I doing this? Like, who am I trying to impress? You know, even when I got that physique that I thought I needed to get the girls and to impress other people, guess what? They didn't come. I was attracting more guys because guys were complimenting me. Like, dude, you look great. You know, like your biceps looking good. You're, you know, you're squatting this much. Like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, but obviously I was in it for the wrong reasons. So yeah. I did that. You know, I started working on myself and my own mindset then for the next couple of years after that. And then what kind of got me into coaching from there is in 2015, 2016, when I started taking my own health seriously and really buckled down, my dad had a stroke. It wasn't a serious stroke, but it was a wake-up call for him too. Just like I had my own wake-up call. Thankfully it was nothing like that, but he turned to me for help. So he was like, wanted help with getting strong. So got him in the gym with me, put him on a routine with me. We were working out together, you know, consistently for 6, 7, 8 months. I can't remember exactly how long, but he got really strong and his health improved tremendously just from that one thing of just focusing on getting stronger, you know, doing heavy compound movements and just getting moving more and things like that. And that, of course, had the trickle down effect where he started paying attention to his nutrition and things like that. So that was awesome. And then from there, my brother-in-law kind of took notice. And so he started working out with us as well. So I was kind of coaching these guys unofficially, you know, and so I had my family, that were my first kind of clients unofficially, you know, so, from there, that kind of inspired me, like, this is amazing. Like seeing the way it's making my family members feel. So from there, I started actually pursuing my certification in personal training. I started doing it as a hobby with just friends that needed help. I did that as a hobby for a couple of years. And then, you know, at that time I was still working in corporate. So I had a corporate job up until 2019. In 2019, I was like, you know, there's more to this than just working for somebody else, making somebody else rich and not being happy, essentially, you know? So at that point it was about the middle of 2019 and I started working on, it's like, I want to try this online coaching thing because I had worked with an online coach back in 2016 as well, which really ignited my passion for health and fitness. And that was really the eye opener for me because we followed like a, if it fits your macros approach back then. So it was like, that was a complete game changer for me. It was like, wow, carbs aren't bad. I can eat carbs and you know, they're our friend. They fuel our body and all this good stuff. So
wild.
Yeah. So that's kind of where it started. So 2019, I started looking to get online, started on Instagram, doing infographics and things like that and workout videos. And of course, then in 2020, this thing called the pandemic happened and everybody was stuck at home. So I was productive with my time to say the least. I got on TikTok, started pounding out videos, 2, 3, 4 videos a day, and started growing on there. And when that started happening, once I started picking up some traction, I started meeting all these amazing coaches. I met Beth Ferracco and all these other amazing coaches, connected with them. And that's when I got my nutrition certification as well with Precision Nutrition and became a certified nutritionist as well. And the rest, as you can say, is history.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So you had some life circumstances kind of led you right into nutrition. Just generally speaking, what do people get wrong about nutrition the most?
Ooh, that's a great question. What I see is it's a mindset. It's this all or nothing mindset when it comes to nutrition and health and fitness. You know, people have a tendency to think that they have to cut out X food or I can't eat that because that's bad. You know, when really this all or nothing mindset is actually what's keeping people from getting the results they're after and being happy with themselves and being healthy. Because what that kind of does is it promotes this binge restrict cycle when we're doing this all or nothing. Like we just go so hard on cutting out carbs or whatever it might be, but that for most people, that's not sustainable, you know? So what happens then is they just go completely off the deep end. Probably on the weekends is when they start binging, overeating and turning to sugary food. So then they're like, well, sugar's the problem. I'm just going to cut that out. You know, well then, you know, they can do that for a little bit of time, but then they're going to start, you know, binging and craving sweet snacks, salty snacks at night. And they're going to think that's the problem, but really the problem is, you know, they don't understand what balance and moderation is. And that's, I, in my opinion, that's the number one thing that's keeping people from getting the results they're after is that mindset. And balance, of course, and moderation is different for everybody. You know, it's hard and it takes some trial and error and looking inward and finding out how your body responds to certain foods. And it's not quick or sexy. And that's the other thing too. We're so conditioned to expect to get results in the first week. I lost X amount of weight in 10 or 1 week, right? 10 pounds in 1 week. We hear this all the time, but we know that that's just not realistic and sustainable. And we also know that that's really, most of that's not even fat in the first place. And that's really what matters.
Absolutely. for your dad, or was the, you mentioned strength training kind of led him into getting more healthy from a lifestyle perspective, and then it ended up going into the nutrition portion of things. I'm curious though, for Gen Pop, is there, for just folks like me, you know, where do you recommend starting, or is there a good starting place? Would you say, yeah, try training and eventually that'll impact the rest of your lifestyle? Or is there more benefit for people just starting on the nutrition side and getting into all that other stuff later?
I like that. I'm a firm believer in creating your own motivation. So getting started and doing something, you know, because people rely on motivation. And as we know, motivation comes and goes. So I'm a big believer in starting small and building on it from there, building small, healthy, sustainable habits. Mm-hmm. So one of my biggest things I always tell people and talk to people about, like, most people have the ability to walk, right? Some people, of course, can't walk. They can't physically walk, but most people do. So let's start there. Go on 2 10-minute walks every single day. If you can't do two, do one, you know. What that happens is when they start, you know, doing that habit and reaffirming that habit and making it part of their daily life, they're going to crave more. That's going to have that trickle down effect where they're going to start making better choices. So maybe they just start with walking, you know, after doing that for a month or so, they're going to be like, this is awesome. I love the way it makes me feel. It gives me this mental clarity. I have more energy. My stress levels are down. What's next? What else can I do? Then what I notice is people will start turning to the gym, to weightlifting, to strength training. You know, people will start doing that. And all the while they may not even be realizing it, they're also making better nutrition choices. They're adding in, you know, more lean proteins. They're adding in more fruits and veg without even really realizing it because of that trickle down effect. You know, a lot of people have this mindset of like, well, I'm taking care of myself. I'm working out a little bit better. So I'm going to start eating a little bit better, essentially. So if you're struggling to start, you know, just start moving more, go on that walk every day and do that for like a month. And you'll probably subconsciously start making better choices even in that first month.
Sure. Do you see the same issues with training that people have with nutrition as far as being on the extremes?
Oh boy. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of the extremes we see, going to the gym 5, 6, 7 days a week. Most people like I see that so much, right? When people come to me for help, I'm working out 5 days a week. What else can I do? What more can I do? I'm like, well, actually, you're probably trying to do too much. Cause what I'm seeing is you're trying to go to the gym 5 days a week, but you're not able to make it to the gym 5 days a week. So now you're beating yourself up, you know? So let's scale that down. Can you do 3 days a week? Great. Let's do like 3 full body workouts or an upper lower full body workout or something like that. Let's start there, scale it back. And I always tell people like, less is more sometimes. More is not more, you know, when it comes to nutrition, less is not more, but when it comes to, physical activity, less is more in a way, if that makes sense.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Interesting point you're making there. Nutrition, less is not more. Dive into that a little bit. Cause I think you have talked a little bit about starvation diets and that kind of thing. So yeah, dive into that a little more.
Yeah. So starvation diets, they're very popular. That's how most diets, fad diets work, you know, things like, Optavia and, Weight Watchers to a certain extent will put people on very low calories and people of course will be like, well, yeah, it works. Like, yeah, of course that's going to work. You're starving yourself, you know, but you're not getting the nutrients you need. You're not getting the protein you need. So when we're starving ourselves, we're going on these very low calories, you're going to get results. You're almost guaranteed to get results going that low of calories. But it's not sustainable. And everything I talk about and preach is about sustainability. Can you do this for the rest of your life? Can you starve yourself for the rest of your life? No, you're going to be miserable. You're going to mess up your hormones. You're going to, you know, be nutrient deficient. You're going to deplete your muscles. Get rid of your muscles. You're going to potentially lose hair. Mm-hmm. All this other stuff that comes with low calorie diets over that are doing it for an extended amount of time. But that's what we see so often, right? Is this just blanket like 1200 calories. And unfortunately, that's a very generic recommendation that we get from a lot of doctors and things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's very harmful. But that's what I help people get away from as well. Like, you're not seeing results. And this is other thing. There's actually studies showing like people that think they're eating 1200 calories a day, while they might be doing that 4 or 5 days a week, on the other 2 or 3 days of the week, they're bringing in 3 or 4,000 calories.
Yeah.
because of that restriction and binging. So they're going off the deep end and completely negating any deficit that they created to lose fat. So they're just sitting there spinning their wheels. So then they're like, well, I'm eating 1200 calories a day and I'm not seeing results. And most of the time I call bullshit on that. And, you know, I'm like, how do you know, like, are you logging your food? Let's see your food log. Let's look at that. You know, are you logging your food accurately, consistently?
Yeah. Just so people can hear this loud and clear. Have you ever found a situation where, let's say somebody's a complete couch potato, maybe they're female and they're, I don't know, 5'1" or something, where their maintenance calories you would need to be at or lower than 1200.
In my experience, no.
Okay.
And I've coached hundreds of clients over the last couple of years, and I've helped hundreds of thousands more on social media. Now, having said that, there are unique situations where if people are have been doing crash diets and yo-yo diets and fad diets their entire life, their metabolism can be in, you know, on the ground because of that. It could be at 1200 calories or so a day, but the answer is not to go lower then. The answer is to do a reverse diet, start getting more calories in, and bump up our total daily energy expenditure in the form of eating more protein, going on more walks, and potentially doing some strength training.
So is a reverse dieting just literally eating more?
Yeah, it's the same concept of a calorie deficit, but just in reverse, right? So what we typically do with a reverse diet is when somebody's met their goal weight, their goal physique, and they're like, I'm happy here, like I'm good. Then we start, you know, doing a reverse diet. So we don't want to keep their calories low forever. So we slowly start introducing more calories. The way I like to do it is about 75 calories every week or two, add back into the diet. So if they stopped cutting weight at 1500 calories or so, then week one, you know, we'll stay there for a couple of weeks just to make sure it's truly leveled out. And then we'll do 75 calories 1 week, 75 calories the next week, and continue doing our body weight measurements and body measurements to make sure that we're not gaining too quickly. Cause there's going to be a little bit of probably going to gain a little bit, but that's okay. Cause we're doing it to restore our metabolism essentially. Right. Cause being in an extended caloric deficit, it's going to affect your metabolism. That's the laws of thermodynamics, you know, metabolic adaptation is a real thing. So that's why we also don't want to be in a calorie deficit for an extended amount of time.
Right. What does that do for people mentally? Because I'm sure, especially for folks who've been on that for so long, eating anything over whatever they think their maintenance is probably challenging. And the first reaction for somebody, I'm sure, would be, I'm going to get fat. So how does that affect them?
Well, when I get some resistance to that, to adding in more calories, I always ask them a very straightforward question. How has this worked for you in the past? Because if it did, they wouldn't be in this situation, right? And then the light bulb goes on. They're like, oh shit, I've been doing this for 20 or 30 years and I've been losing and gaining the same 20 pounds for those 20 or 30 years, you know? So I hope that helps people realize that it's just not working for them.
Yeah, yeah. And then any changes that you see from a mental standpoint, just as they continue to progress along that reverse diet line, like what do they end up, where do they end up at mentally?
Yeah, man, great question. So when we do a reverse diet and we start getting people more calories, definitely has a positive impact on our mental health because we're not feeling so restricted. You know, when we're heavily restricting like that, we're people use food as a comfort, as a release outlet a lot of times. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just being aware of that. So then you get that freedom to have those fun foods occasionally, whereas before there was just no room for them before. So now you're heavily restricted. So then we start seeing that binge cycle starts to kind of go away because they're allowing themselves, they have the flexibility and the freedom to eat 1800 calories. And that's for a lot of people, they struggle eating that much. And then, so then we're having the conversation is like, well, we're actually eating too clean, right? Like, let's start looking at adding in some fun foods. Let's add in some peanut butter or some chocolate bar, or maybe it's a pizza once a week or something like that to help us to bump those calories up a little bit. And then they start doing these things and lo and behold, body measurements are looking great. Like the body measurements are trending down over time. They're getting stronger in the gym. Like they're able to do a full body weight push-up or pull-up for the first time in their life. And that's the type of stuff that I love to see with these, with getting all these extra calories and protein, is watching people just get really, really strong, and the confidence that comes with that, the confidence in their physical body and then their mindset.
I don't know how familiar you are with like the powerlifting world, but one thing I've heard of in that space by Mountain Dog, John Meadows.
Oh, he's great.
John Meadows was, and loved the personality. And the one of the things that he mentioned were refeeds on times where you've been in crazy calorie deficits. And I guess his concept of a refeed was like going to at least to maintain. I think he was definitely in a surplus after an extended period of being almost like a reset, and then diving right back into it. Is there any validity to, from a nutritional standpoint, to doing that? Like, does your body actually reset things? Like, how physiologically, is there any difference?
So it takes a little bit of time. It depends how long you're doing that refeed and that diet break. But yeah, there's a huge mental component to it for sure. But in terms of physical, yeah, there is. I'm very loose with the way I do my nutrition and things like that with clients. I encourage them to go over their calorie deficits every once in a while for a couple of reasons. For education, to teach them and show them that, hey, you went 500 calories over your deficit. Guess what? You're probably still in a deficit, and it's not the end of the world. What happened, right? Maybe the scale went up that next day, but the next day it's going to level off. Mm-hmm. From a physical perspective, yeah, if you're doing a refeed for long enough, it's essentially a diet break or eating at maintenance for a week or two. Okay. can definitely help with kind of keeping your metabolism healthy. And really, if you're in a fat loss phase and it's going to take a while, you know, 6-12 months longer, every couple of months, do a week or two at a break, you know, maybe even a break from tracking, and try to use that as an experiment with yourself to see if you can eat mindfully and not have to track and still make progress or maintain your progress, right? Because that ultimately what matters is the maintenance part. Like, if we get the results but we don't keep them, it was a failure, you know?
Yep. Is there any validity to doing a refeed for one day, or does it need to be extended enough process to where your body can actually do some sort of resetting on the metabolic rate?
For one, if you're doing it one day, that's more of a mental break.
Okay.
Just from being that restricted and that low on calories, it's going to give you that flexibility. Now, a lot of people will call that cheat days. You know, if you want, like, I don't like that term cheat days, but refeed, I love the term refeed, because you're giving your body more food. And I would recommend, if you're going to do a refeed day, then definitely try to do it slightly above your maintenance level calories, if you know where that's at, just for that mental break.
Gotcha. I'll dive into like some real particulars that I'm curious about: keto, paleo diets, water satiety, that kind of thing. But I want to just zoom way back out for a second and ask, because I told you at the beginning I've had issues finding good people like you to talk to our audience. How in the world do you identify a good nutritionist in a literal sea of nutritionists? Like, what are you looking for if you were trying to find somebody like yourself?
First and foremost, it's their language. Like, what language are they using? Are they speaking in the absolutes, right? Mm-hmm. Are they saying carbs are bad for you? That's a huge red flag to me, you know? Are they saying this is the way you have to do it? This is the way it must be done. And that's what a lot of these diets do, right? So that's a big red flag, their terminology they're using. Experience matters too. You know, experience is a big part of it, but also just because somebody doesn't necessarily have the experience doesn't mean they don't know what they're talking about. They're just new, you know? Those are a couple of the things. You want to make sure that their values align with yours. If they're preaching a low carb lifestyle, but you enjoy eating carbs, it's probably not a good fit for you, you know? Now on the adverse side of that, some people do enjoy eating low carbs and they do enjoy the keto lifestyle. And that for them, that's great. You know, as I'm sitting here with this sweatshirt, but my fuck keto sweatshirt, I'm very hard on keto, but I'm very hard on keto because of the misconceptions that people have with keto about it being this magical pill and how it's going to cure everybody's problems and it's going to make you lose all this fat. That's really what I fight against with that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think you said this before in videos I've seen on your channel, is it's all about a calorie deficit, no matter what diet you're on. Ultimately come down to a numbers game. Now you can have a more pleasant experience with the numbers game or not. Yeah. You can make yourself miserable or not. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Okay. Specifics now, because I'm curious just on practical advice for people who are, I don't know, trying to repair their relationship with food or for things that are really not true. One of the biggest ones that just keeps going around in my head and that you've mentioned is water for satiety or water for suppressing that hunger urge. And I know that there's like various schools of thought on this. One is just drink when you're thirsty. I'm kind of in that camp. The other one is like drink like 10 gallon or whatever, a gallon a day.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, that seems like a freaking lot of water. Is that a thing?
So there is no really evidence to support saying like 1 gallon of water a day. That's, of course, that's very generalized for people. And I just tell people like, you could probably benefit from drinking more water, right? Sure. Most people can benefit from that. So I'll always tell people like, hey, when you wake up in the morning, first thing you do after you go to the bathroom and everything, get a glass of water. Then you can start drinking your coffee. That's just a good habit to start and to start reinforcing that habit. Water, then coffee, habit stacking, right? And then having water with each meal. Now there is evidence to support drinking water with our meals. Has a positive impact on fat loss. It helps keep us full because it fills up our stomach and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, using water to silence our hunger cues, that's troublesome. You know, drinking water when we're physically hungry, because we just don't want to eat, that's a problem. That's disordered. That's when a whole new can of worms opens up. So silencing your hunger with water, that's definitely troublesome, but using water, you know, with your meals and things like that to help give you that satisfying feeling and things like that, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Gotcha. Is there any advantage to before you're experiencing those hunger pangs or getting to the point where you actually do need to eat, like drinking enough water to maybe elongate the period up until you have like, you feel hunger symptoms?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, okay. I always have water with me, and I try to enforce that with my clients as well, as try to get them to just have a water bottle, a water jug, or easy access to water with them. Cause a lot of my clients are like busy professionals, nurses, especially their night shift on and things like that. Very hard for them to stay hydrated. So they're chronically dehydrated most of the time, you know, and then they're trying to catch up when they're on their off shift, you know? But you know, it's going to impact a lot of things. It's going to impact our hormones, our hunger levels. Everything can kind of get out of whack with that.
Do you have a specific prescription for how much, or is it just be regular about it?
Just be regular about it. I always, this is of course a very generic suggestion, but look at the color of your pee, right? Like there's people that will tell you to look at it, and if it's clear, you're good. I actually don't recommend clear pee. I like a lemonade tint, essentially.
Okay.
If your pee is lemonade tinted colored, you're probably good.
Mm-hmm. It's when it's like dark yellow. That's probably it.
Yeah. You're probably dehydrated at that point. Now, of course, if you're more active, then you definitely need to drink more water. If you're sweating a lot, once you start working out, you're definitely going to need to drink more. I like a little bit. I've done experiments. I've had my clients do these little experiments on themselves. I'll tell them, go to the gym, weigh yourself before working out, and don't drink any water during your workout. At the end of the workout, weigh yourself again, and that's just how much water you lost. So you need to be drinking at least that much, maybe even 1.5 times that much, to stay properly hydrated during your workout.
Okay, gotcha. I should have asked this at the beginning, and I didn't, so I'll ask it now just to pop back out at the kind of 50,000 foot view. What does it look like for somebody to have a good relationship with food? When you're coaching somebody, when you go, now they get it.
They no longer feel guilt about after eating certain meals. That's one of the biggest things for me. It breaks my heart when people tell me that as a 50-year-old person, that they've never enjoyed a piece of their own birthday cake. Aww. It breaks my heart. So that right there, to me, like every other goal that they have needs to be put on the back burner until we can take care of that problem. So Eliminating the feelings of guilt after we eat a cookie or a donut or something like that. Now, when I say that on social media and TikTok in particular, people are like, I can't believe you're encouraging people to eat donuts and nothing but donuts. I'm like, I literally never said that. But you can have a donut occasionally as a perfect as part of a perfectly balanced diet and lifestyle, and you're going to be perfectly fucking fine.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Back to the minutia again, keto and paleo, you mentioned keto and particular, being particularly averse to that particular diet, but, is there any, can you explain just keto at a high level? Everybody probably knows, but just to summarize, and then what are the issues? Is there any kind of net benefit from it?
So keto is essentially changing your body's fuel source from burning carbs as its primary fuel source, which is, you know, what our body prefers is carbs, to stored fat as a fuel source. Ketosis is what it's called. Yeah. Now it's going to be stored fat or dietary fat, right? So when your body's depleted of carbs, your body needs to get energy from somewhere. So it's going to switch to dietary fat for its fuel. That's a very common misconception with keto, is keto means fat burning. Mm. Now there's a difference between dietary fat burning and burning stored fat. The only way to burn stored fat is, of course, to be in a caloric deficit. You can do the keto diet and consume more calories than you're burning every day, and you will not lose fat. That's just a scientific fact. People will try to argue that, of course, but it's the laws of thermodynamics. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It can only be transferred. Right. Yep. So there's that. What was the follow up question?
So, the major issues with keto, and then is there any net benefit ultimately?
There really isn't any evidence, and I could be wrong, but I've talked with a lot of experts and professionals and done a lot of research on this. The totality of evidence does not support, you know, promoting keto as a way of eating for a lot of people. Unless, of course, like we can't, you know, epileptic children and things like that. There's some evidence to support that. But like even with diabetics and things like that, or PCOS, that's a very common misconception, is you need to go to keto for that. You just need to moderate your carbs and control your carbs at that point, but you don't need to eliminate them altogether. And that can actually be dangerous for a diabetic to just eliminate all carbs. You know, I actually had that argument on TikTok this morning. I'm always arguing on TikTok with people, that keto needs to be done. If you're type 1 diabetic, you need to do keto. I'm like, you're going to get somebody killed giving people advice like that.
Yeah. It's a type two is insulin dependent, right? Mm. Yeah, 'cause my mom is a type 2 diabetic, and whenever I hear go into ketosis, I'm like, that spells danger. Not only in my mind, it spells danger for not only diabetics, but also just people in general. Ketosis is not a good thing. Am I incorrect in making that statement?
No, you're not wrong at all. It's not a good thing. No, it's very hard on your body. And we see a lot of times what we'll see is because people there's a better way to do keto and a really bad way to do keto. A lot of people do what's called lazy keto. They just start eating butter and bacon and all this other crap, right? As their primary fat sources. We see a lot of gallbladder issues on it at that point too, with keto. So,
okay. Yeah, I didn't think so. I mean, yeah, ketosis spells death for diabetics, just in case anybody was curious. So,
right. Absolutely.
Paleo, this is something that I have a special place in my heart for, because I actually used to do it. But I don't actually have any feelings one way or the other towards it. So I'm curious about your thoughts, because how it looked for me was basically meat and vegetables. Vegetable portion's good. The all meat kind of destroying your liver portion, probably a bad thing. And I was told there were some long-term studies about getting fatty liver disease and that kind of thing if you kept on it for far too long. So what's the evidence behind that?
Yeah. I'm not sure of any evidence that really supports that either, but I agree with you about your statement about the studies showing fatty liver disease. Now paleo is a weird one, because we don't really hear much about paleo anymore. Yeah. What's happened is it's evolved into carnivore. And carnivore is very, very extreme with that, you know, meat, eggs, and cheese. And some people try to take carnivore, you know, fruits and a little bit of veg, but whenever I hear, you know, that, I'm like, they're always saying like, we need to eat like our ancestors. But when they're saying that, they're just ignoring the fact that our ancestors actually ate, you know, roughage. They ate whatever the hell was available to them. They did not pick and choose. You know, they saw berries, they were going to eat the berries, you know? And they also lived to the ripe age of like 35, but that wasn't necessarily because of diets. It was, we were fighting, well, you know, whatever we had, you know, whatever natural stuff we had back then. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because, people like to point out with a lot of these diets, I feel like people like to point out, well, this is what people used to do. And I'm looking at exactly what you just said, like life expectancy alone would make me want to go the opposite direction. With carnivore, does it have the same, does it have worse issues than paleo? And because I was talking with a gentleman, who was it? I'm not going to remember his name. Wow, that's terrible. Mike Baker, who's one of the like prominent carnivore kind of advocates. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that, it, you know, fattier meat contents, you can get a lot more of the nutritional value out of that. But is there any benefit at all? I've heard anecdotal evidence about this curing a multitude of other diseases, physiological stuff. Like what's the deal there?
I'm glad you mentioned anecdotal evidence because that's all carnivore diet has to support it is anecdotal evidence. I follow a lot of nutrition experts and I've chatted with a lot of nutrition experts and they are very adamant that the carnivore diet is going to turn out to be one of the most harmful diets in history. Oof. Because, and they say this publicly too, because you're there, it's next to impossible to get a full, you know, all the nutrients that you need. Yeah. People will say, well, you just need to start eating liver and this and this. I'm like, who the hell is going to like, who, majority of the population, who's going to do that? Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's what it's all about is making this sustainable and practical for people. Not only that, but eating a carnivore diet is very expensive.
Oh yeah. You
know, eating all those fresh cuts of meat like that. And you know, not everybody can afford that. You know, some people can only afford the prepackaged foods and things like that. So we need to help them understand how they can eat on a budget, but still make it a little bit more nutritious essentially.
Yeah. Oh, and even if they could, it's still not, it doesn't fill in your nutritional gaps. Like you'd have
to. Right. And you see that all the time on the carnivore diet as people are supplementing. Yeah. Well, you don't need to supplement if you're eating a balanced diet for the most part. You might have a few deficiencies, but that can be easily corrected. But you shouldn't, if your way of eating, your diet makes you rely on supplements, that's like, be real with yourself. Like, what is this doing for you? And on the anecdotal evidence thing, I'm actually in some Facebook support groups for carnivore diets, just to be a fly on the wall. And every single day it's, I'm having X symptom. Is this normal on carnivore or is this normal? And I'm like, no, that's normal. That's not normal. Like losing your hair. No, that's not normal. Getting gallstones. That's not normal. All these other issues that people are seeing. No, that's not normal. But then people, these quote unquote experts in these Facebook groups are like, yeah, you just need to eat more, you know, consume more electrolytes. That's the answer to everything on the carnivore diet. More electrolytes, more sodium, more salt. Like that's no.
Interesting. Okay. So it's just still trying to stay within the restraints, but, does liver or anything else like give you the additional, is there electrolytes?
Liver's fantastic. I mean, it's a great source of nutrition. Now, whether or not you can get complete nutrition from it, I don't believe you can. And yeah. I don't know of any evidence to support that statement either. You know, there's a thing called fiber, and fiber is great. That's the biggest thing for carnivores is they'll say, oh, fiber is a myth. We don't need fiber. But fiber is, it's very important to our gut health and our microbiome. Mm-hmm. And you're going to wreak havoc on it without it.
Yeah. Well, you didn't do Liver King any favors with that statement.
I have my thoughts on Liver King. I started talking about him publicly a little bit more. Nice. Yeah.
Tell me more.
People call me an influencer, but I hate that term. I call myself the anti-influencer. because in my opinion, influencers are trying to sell you something and they're full of misinformation. Liver King, case in point. As far as I know, he has never acknowledged the fact that he uses performance enhancing drugs. It is
shocking.
It is right. Because guess what? He sells supplements. He's got a supplement line with the other carnivore zealot, what's his name? Dr. Sean Baker, I believe his name is.
Oh, Sean, that's the guy we interviewed. Yeah.
Oh, so you interviewed him. So they have a supplement line together. This is not really public knowledge. A lot of people don't know that, but if you look at the paperwork for their business filings and things like that, they're actually in business together in one of their supplement lines. Now, if you are talking publicly about your performance enhancing drug usage, first of all, that's illegal, right? Second of all, now you can't sell your supplements because people know you didn't take those supplements to get those results that you did. And that's my biggest problem with people like that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know who in their right mind also, I have come across it, but I don't know who in the right mind looks at a physique like that and goes, yeah, I could get that.
And that looks healthy. I mean, the dude is red and purple all the time too.
Yeah.
Like, tell me how that's healthy.
Yeah. Some blood circulation issue, something's going on. I don't know what it is, but I don't want to be part of it.
I believe in transparency and I'm very transparent in the way I live my life. You know, I'm not a physical specimen. You know, I look like an average guy and I go and I can deadlift 500 pounds and squat 400 pounds, which is for me, that's amazing. You know, but I don't have a physique of the gods and I never want to do that. You know, I'm all about getting people moving more, finding a way of movement that they enjoy and that they can stick with and just living a more balanced lifestyle.
So I
call a lot of this shit out.
Well, it's longevity is the name of the game. And if you're in PED, if you're on PEDs, longevity is like your problem, like the exact problem that you are, like you're going to die of a heart attack at some point.
And we're seeing that, right? Like, unfortunately, we're seeing all these prominent bodybuilders have health problems and dying at age 50 or 60 because of their usage. But you ask them and they don't regret it, right? They did it for the fame and to have their name remembered, which that's them. That's amazing for them. I'm happy for them. That was a choice they made. But for us everyday people, it's not a thing. We shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah. And the other part of that too, is a lot of these guys really do have phenomenal information and particularly like guys like John Meadows, who are very transparent about his PED usage.
Yep.
And the fact that they were taking,
that's why I love him.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they died early is a huge deal to me because of the kind of quality information they were putting out.
John Meadows, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so like, I'm not saying like for the greater good of mankind, don't take steroids, but at the same time, I'm like, stick around a little longer, please.
if your goal is to be around as long as you possibly can and you want to be as healthy as you possibly can, yeah, definitely you should not be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, if your goal is to be like those guys and to be at the prime of your physical shape and to win all these competitions and become a prominent bodybuilder, then yeah, you're going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
But for us, but like you said, with John, like, John, like that was such a blow when we lost him. The knowledge he was able to transfer to everybody and break it down into a way that everybody understood.
Yes,
I incorporate a lot of his movements into my workouts every day. You know, I love Meadows rows and things like that. Like, fantastic. He had such a way of manipulating the body that was just so incredible. And it's a shame. It's so sad that we lost him.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever, just going back to the fad diet comments, have you ever come across a fad diet that actually had something good to offer long-term?
That's a good question. It's a very slippery slope, but I will say out of all the fad diets I've ever come across, in my opinion, Weight Watchers is one of the ones that has some merit behind it, some benefit from behind it. And the reason being is because it's their own version of a calorie deficit. You know, their point system is a calorie deficit. It's just their own spin on it. You know, it's just making you rely on their point system, but at the same time, their concepts are pretty solid. You know, they don't charge you points for fruits or they don't charge you points for vegetables, I think, or they're very low points. Nice. They do dock you points for fruits and things like that, which I feel like they unfairly demonize fruits and things like that. But if I had to say one, that's the one I would say has some merit behind it.
Okay, gotcha. What would you say to people though that we're talking about? Oh, don't be afraid of, you know, having a pizza every so often, as long as you're kind of thinking about nutrition the right way, or candy or chocolate bar. What would you say to the people that go, well, those things are inherently bad. Like, you shouldn't, the sugar or the big candy or whatever you want to call it, big sugar has, you know, their hooks in the American public, and you should never be touching those things ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
what
would be your response to that? Like, how do you see it that way?
It's what I always like to say to people when people say sugar is bad. First of all, what do you mean? Like, because carbs, you know, are sugar. Like, you have your simple carbs and your complex carbs, right? A simple carb is, it's just your body uses it for energy. It breaks it down more quickly. It goes quicker into the bloodstream. A complex carb breaks down slower, more sustained energy source, things like oats and whole grains and things like that. I just ask them, like, so you literally never eat sugar and you'll never eat sugar again, because sugar is very vital to life. You know, it's a very vital nutrient. Now, that doesn't mean that when people say sugar, what they're referring to, right, is the added sugar, the refined sugar, cookies and sweets and things like that. But people hate this fact. Our body doesn't know, the body doesn't know the difference between right. a naturally occurring sugar and an added sugar, because chemically speaking, there is no difference. The only difference being, if you're eating something like fruit that has naturally occurring sugar in it, it's got fiber paired up with it, which then helps to minimize the impact of our blood sugar, you know, that's really the only difference. So people get super triggered when I tell them, like, hey, your body doesn't know the difference, because there is none. So
yeah, I bet they do. Let me think. From a practical standpoint, there's a lot of folks that are in sales, have traveling positions, and the nutrition part is really hard. There's people who are able to sit at home and kind of think about their nutrition and work regular 9-to-5s. Sure. Work from home is becoming a thing, but you know, there's still the traveling part. Any tips for those people? I'm one of them. I kind of in and out and doing different things, you know.
Yeah.
What's a good strategy to kind of manage the nutritional part, especially when you can't always meal prep?
Yeah, great question. I can speak from experience. When I worked in the corporate environment, I traveled a lot. I'd be gone, you know, 1 or 2 weeks out of the month. So one of the biggest things that you can always do that you can control no matter where you are is a salad. Like, get a big ass salad every single day, we call it, right? So get that salad and load it up with some good protein source and lots of different colors and fruits or vegetables, fruits, even if you like fruit on your salad. Mm-hmm. The only thing to be mindful then, of course, is the dressing. You know, the dressing is where most of the calories come from in a salad. But if you take that big salad and you eat that, that's going to keep you full for a very long time because of the protein and the fiber. So I would, if you're traveling, try to get a salad every day. And be prepared with snacks, travel with snacks, things like apples, bananas, things that don't need to necessarily be refrigerated, that are convenient. You can put in your bag, beef jerky, protein bars, things like that. Those were my staples when I was traveling for work. And then when you go out with clients or coworkers at dinner, you can have the steak and potato or the deep fried food if you want to. And really, like, because if we're doing that every day, you know, every meal of every day, that's good. That, of course, that could probably be a problem long term. But just doing that when we're traveling for a week here and there, it's what we do over the course of our life is really what matters.
Right. Yep. Awesome. So if people wanted to talk to you about nutrition or even get coached by you on nutrition, where would they go to find you?
Definitely. So you can DM me on Instagram is the best way to get direct contact with me. My username is Matt Larfitt. My website is fitfattraining.com, or you can also find me on TikTok if you want to see me arguing with trolls and things like that. And then I also have the podcast with Beth Ferracco Fitness called Cut the Crap with Beth and Matt. We're just all about no bullshit, just breaking things down and uncomplicating things. We get registered dietitians on there all the time to talk about nutrition and all these myths and things like that. So if they wanted to learn more, they could definitely do that.
How'd you get connected with Beth in the first place? I'm curious.
Great question. So we connected early on in our TikTok journey together. We got on TikTok very early on at about the same time.
Okay.
And we kind of connected and we just followed each other for a while and would comment on each other's videos every once in a while. But we both started kind of growing at the same rates and very quickly as well. And when that happened, people are always tagging us in each other's videos, like, oh my God, you're the female version of Matt. You're the male version of Beth. And people actually started calling us TikTok husband and wife, you know? So we're like, Beth. So from there, you know, Beth and I would be chatting on Instagram DMs and we would be sharing like our troll comments that we'd be receiving, taking screenshots and sharing and just kind of laughing at people. And like, can you like, where are people coming in with stuff? You know? So That kind of started. And then we're like, people love it when we collaborate, you know, people love it when we chatted with each other. So that's kind of how our collaboration with the podcast and everything, happened, but we connected, you know, early 2020 for that. So
nice. I found social media, particularly Instagram, has been just the great connector of people. People I've never thought I would have talked to in a million years.
And you mentioned some other amazing coaches earlier in the podcast, Olivia and Beefcake Brina. We're actually we're in a group chat with each other on Instagram. So we bounce ideas off of each other. And if we're doing research, we'll share research with each other and things like that. I'm a big believer in coaching. Like, people will, you know, just try to be in their own silo with coaching. Like, no, collaborate with other people, network with other people, get to know other people. You can grow, you'll learn from that. I actually just met Olivia last weekend in person. Yep. So I was in Phoenix visiting some friends, and I was like, Olivia, don't you live in Phoenix? So we planned a day, like, we got a workout in together. We made some TikTok videos together. It was fun. And hopefully this year has more of that coming from me meeting other coaches. I know Beth and I are going to be meeting in August. We're planning on doing this really big hike with each other in Maine. So definitely ask her about that on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Oh man, that sounds so fun. Well, I'm glad you guys are all connected. I really am. It's so refreshing to see like an evidence-backed and based community coming together and actually being able to share that information with each other and their audience. It's like I said, it's rare. So I love it.
I love that. Thank you.
Matt, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and thanks so much for your time, man.
Absolutely, Ashton. This hour flew by, man, but it's been awesome.
Excellent. Thank you for listening. Please give FreedomCast a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It would mean a lot to our business. Plus, it's fun to read y'all's reviews. See you next time.